For most of you, I think when you first walked into the room, copies of the executive summary for the health impact assessment being passed out. There are additional copies, I believe, in the back of the room. If you didn't get one and would like to see it, as Maureen mentioned, our website, healthyschoolfoodsnow.org, everything is available there, the executive summary and the full, very beautifully designed 200-plus page report. And one thing I wanted to point out for this audience in particular, because I thought it would be of interest, is that one of the appendices of the HIA is available only online. It's more than 40, it's a 40-page table of every piece of research we looked at and highlights where the study, what the study was, who were the authors, where it was from, what was the study population, and what were the key findings. And you can really get a good sense, broken down by sort of topic area, which ones focused on, you know, looking at increased risk of diabetes versus dental caries or cavities, which one was about the school revenue piece versus another piece of the HIA. So I highly encourage you all to look at it. It's a great body of evidence that I think can really add to the field, since many of us in the room are researchers. So coming back to the policy recommendations that we formed, I wanted to mention that, as Mel explained our HIA findings, these led to a series of policy recommendations that were presented to USDA focused on the nutrition standards themselves, as well as things to consider around implementation of these recommendations, both promising practices, which I'll talk a little bit more for schools to look at, as well as things USDA can do to support implementation. All of these recommendations reflect the outcomes and conclusions presented by Mel and outlined in the HIA, and are all aimed at maximizing the positive health benefits we found through the report and minimizing any potential risks or harms that we might have found, primarily where there was an opportunity to do this and lead towards not finding those loss of revenue in the schools. We geared our recommendations in that way, knowing that would be more practical. If you do have a copy of the executive summary with you, you can follow along the details of the recommendations on page 5 as I'm talking. So the first recommendation is that USDA should establish nutrition standards for all foods sold regularly on school grounds outside of the school meal program, and that these standards should specifically address a requirement that schools sell items from the Dietary Guidelines for Americans list of foods to encourage, which are fruits, vegetables, low-fat dairy, whole grains. As Maureen pointed out in her report, it's not enough to just limit the unhealthy options, but we also have to make a strong concerted effort that we also need to provide healthier items as choices for students. It's also important that the recommendations include age-appropriate calorie limits. Our analysis of research, broken down by age, grade level, sex, and physical activity, indicated that the recommendations for snacks should be a maximum of 100 calories for elementary schools, 140 for middle schools, and 180 calories for high school students. For entree items, because that is not uncommon to find entree items sold through the a la carte line, we recommend that it should be no more than a maximum of 300 calories for elementary and middle school, and no more than 400 calories for high school students. On sugar, we recommend that limit there be a maximum of 35%, of total maximum total calories from sugar. Our research really indicated that the ultimate way to go would be to have a limit on added sugar, but as that's not something that's readily available on a food level label yet, we can't go that far. So for now, the best we can do is look at limits on total sugar. And I should add, as pointed out in the full report, this exempts the natural sugar found in fruits, vegetables, et cetera. When it comes to fats, we recommend that there be a maximum limit for fats, including no more than 35% of calories from total fat, 10% of calories from saturated fat, and less than or equal to 0.5 grams of trans fat per serving. And on sodium, while we know that it's really important to have incremental reductions in sodium, the research is still a little shaky on what is that ideal level of sodium in a snack food. And not being able to provide a specific limit in terms of numbers, we recommend to USDA that they take steps to do incremental reductions in sodium, coming up with a target time frame of 10 years that would be in full alignment with recommendations through the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, but also consistent with what they're doing with the school meal program and sodium reductions. Oops. Our second recommendation was centered around beverages. And we do think USDA should establish nutrition guidelines for all beverages sold on school grounds. We divided it by age level here. In elementary and middle schools, not only does it already seem to be wide practice that beverages are limited to only water, low-fat, and fat-free milk, and 100% fruit juice, but that also doesn't seem to be very controversial. Everyone's on board that, yes, that's a good idea. And so we are consistent in following with a lot of the existing state policies there. Looking at high schools, we come into this whole issue of choice again, and it's a little more controversial. So while the research supports establishing calorie and serving size restrictions for all beverages to be as close to zero as possible to ensure that we're not getting a large percentage of our calories from sugar-sweetened beverages, the practicality of that, given the current nutrition environment and the lack of addressing this issue at the state and local level, means that we can't go straight to zero. We're going to have to take some incremental steps here. So again, we don't provide a specific number. However, we do suggest that it needs to be as close to zero as possible while taking into account local flexibility and control. Around implementation of these recommendations, as I mentioned, we think it's really important that USDA adopt policies and practices that ensure schools will actually be able to do this and do it well without losing money. So at a minimum, USDA should provide training and technical assistance to schools and districts on these changes. They should also provide clear guidance on how the terms infrequent, school day, and school campus will be addressed. These are three terms that were included in the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act in the section that gives the Secretary of Agriculture the authority to update these standards, but weren't clearly defined and could be interpreted very differently across the board, so we would like USDA to provide guidance to schools on that. We'd also like to ensure that, because it's been so long since they were updated last time, 1979 to 2012 is quite the gap, that procedures are put into place to ensure that as future iterations of the dietary guidelines come out, we go take a look at these nutrition standards and decide, do they need to be updated again, and do so every 5 years with new versions. And finally, because there are so many states and non-governmental agencies out there that are already doing this and doing it well, we would like to see USDA work with these places to develop a series of best practices and success stories and work with them like the CDC, other groups like the CDC, to help with the monitoring and evaluation of the implementation of these standards. So one other thing we are releasing today, which is really exciting, is a new infographic on the health impact assessment and our policy recommendations, and copies of that were also passed around, and extras are in the back. Again, you can find this on our website. And what we wanted to do was to give people a visual of what does this look like? What does the snack food environment look like? And as Maureen pointed out, and also was reiterated in the body of research of the HIA itself, that the majority of snack foods and beverages sold in schools currently are high in calories, they're high in fat, they're high in sugar. So if you look at the left of this image, those items are consistent with what is currently found in the majority of schools around the country, especially in the majority of secondary schools around the country. Items on the right of this graphic demonstrate what the snack food environment could look like if the USDA adopted nutrition standards as recommended in the health impact assessment. These recommendations would not only ensure that snack foods and beverages are more closely aligned with the school meal guidelines, but it also would help ensure, give parents the confidence that when they send their kids to school with money, that either they're buying a school meal and or getting healthy options. I don't know if any of you saw, there was a media story recently about, we referred to him as the angry dad, whose daughter he had been sending with, you know, there was an account that he had put money in hoping to last, you know, several months, and it was gone within a month because she had been spent $120 on junk food, and he could log in and see exactly what she was purchasing. He didn't even know these items were available in the school. She had just transitioned from elementary to middle school. In elementary school, they hadn't been available. Suddenly, they were. So for parents who are doing their best to ensure that they're providing their kids healthy options at home, this gives them that reassurance that they also can go to school and make good choices. And as Matt pointed out earlier, 80% of parents, when we polled them nationally, said, yes, we support this. We want to see standards that look at total calories, fat, sugar, sodium. And if that's what they want, let's give them what they want. then, as I mentioned, we had several promising practices that are highlighted in the HIA that can really be used at sort of the state and local district school level to follow in terms of what are best practices, what are schools doing out there who have been successful at this already to help make it even more successful as they enter into these changes. While it wasn't a primary focus of our research, as we were going through the more than 300 articles we reviewed for the HIA, we found that a lot of them had lists of ways to do it right and ways to do it better. And we took from those and pulled those sort of promising practices. We don't call them best practices because they haven't officially been evaluated in any formal way for the HIA, but we believe that these categories that are presented provide a good foundation for schools to look at and also provide some additional resources in there. And as I mentioned, the full report is available on our website, healthyschoolfoodsnow.org, and in Chapter 6, these are outlined in much greater detail than I'm going through today. So in terms of what's next before we head into questions, as I mentioned, USDA is expected to propose a competitive foods rule sometime in the coming year. Technically, according to the legislation, they were supposed to have already done it, but we know they've been working really hard on school meals, so hopefully it will be coming soon. The Kids Safe and Healthful Foods Project has presented findings today from our health impact assessment, our focus group and national polling message testing, in addition to Matt adding in some great new resources from the California Endowment. And all of this has been presented to USDA staff. So we've already been in there. We've made sure that they're aware of all this research. And we're hoping that when we do see that proposed rule, we will see many of our recommendations incorporated. And I think one important thing as we're all waiting is that the recommendations we've just presented can be applied at the local level as well. So in lieu of having that national rule come out, these are things that people can look at the local and state level and start to move towards these changes.